Welcome to Adult Bedtime Stories. Are you ready to experience nocturnal emissions? Join us in a sex-positive awakening adventure to help create a sex-positive world. Become part of a movement and start living a sex-positive lifestyle, free of sexual shame and guilt. Adult Bedtime Stories is a Ravenslayer production. Adult Bedtime Stories is a show dedicated to bringing sacredness back to our sexuality and to learn about everything sexual. Allow the beautiful, sexy creature within you to emerge. Each week, the focus of the show will be on a different sexual topic designed to enlighten you so you develop more fully as a sexual being. This is a sex education that you didn't receive in high school, but should have. Imagine for a moment that we could change the world and live a sex-positive lifestyle. In our sex-negative world, the process of socialization teaches us to feel shame and guilt around sex. By adopting a new set of attitudes and values around sex, we can view sex with a new understanding, which is accompanied with positive emotions and the attitude that sex is a sacred act. I am Ladyboy Gigi, a sex expert, a life coach, and a sacred harlot. My life vision is to create a sex-positive world through adult education and BDSM performance art. Hello and welcome. You're listening to Adult Bedtime Stories. I am Ladyboy Gigi, and I have Paul with me tonight.
Hey, guys.
Tonight, our topic is going to be on sexual inhibitions for males. And before we get into our topic, I thought it'd be kind of good to clarify some things, because some people have low or no desire, some people are asexual, and some people have sexual inhibitions. And these are three separate things. I think it's good to kind of clarify. If you're asexual, you may have no desire for sex, but it's not really a problem for you. You don't really, it's like there's no interest and it's no big deal. If you have low or no desire and you're concerned about it and it kind of bothers you that, oh, you know, I should be more sexual, or I want to be more sexual, then that's an issue. And asexuality isn't really a sexual issue. It's more of a type of sexuality that's non-sexual.
Yeah, definitely.
And then sexual inhibitions are something that go a little deeper. It's something that inhibits you from being sexually expressive with a partner, or even with yourself for solo sex, masturbation. Yeah. So anything you want to add, Paul?
I think that about covers it. I think, at least in my experience, I've found a lot of times that sexual inhibitions often are something that comes out of having an upbringing that's pretty strict or regressive or repressed.
That, and it can also result from some form of early sexual trauma.
That's true.
Because all of a sudden, body memory kind of kicks in and it shuts things down if you had a bad sexual experience early on.
Yeah.
And interfere with sexual performance big time.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
And so sexual trauma can be very debilitating. I know that I was at one point raped. It was date rape, but it was still rape. Mm-hmm. And that can be pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To overcome and to work through the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've had some issues in the past that probably inhibited you sexually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having a repressive upbringing is a form of sexual trauma, honestly. A lot of the time.
I grew up with a father that was a minister, and mm-hmm. the church taught that they'd read the Bible story about how, I forget his name, pulled out and spilled his seed and didn't follow God's commandment. And they misinterpreted that as masturbation and said, mm-hmm. oh, you shouldn't masturbate. And actually, mm-hmm. God had commanded him to fuck his wife and get her pregnant. And he mm-hmm. didn't follow through. He pulled out because he thought she was too old to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole storyline is just this whole weird contrivance against mm-hmm. masturbation. And it was never said in the Bible that one shouldn't masturbate.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mm-hmm. know of any. And mm-hmm. believe me, I used to have to read the Bible a lot.
mm-hmm.
And then you read the Song of Solomon, and mm-hmm. I'll tell you, he got pretty into sex. And he had lots to sing about.
mm-hmm.
And they never bring that up around sexuality. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's two sides in the Bible. So mm-hmm. I say that because there are people that are Christian and they think mm-hmm. And modern day Christianity is so anti-sex, or has been starting to change a little bit with some churches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I do want to give permission to Christians that mm-hmm. there is no commandment not to masturbate, and there's no commandment mm-hmm. not to have sex. There is.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing Jesus ever really said about it was you shouldn't commit adultery. If you're married, you shouldn't have sex with another person. And he, even with that, he said, if someone's committed adultery, let the person without a sin throw, cast mm-hmm. the first stone when they were trying to stone a woman for a committed adultery. So,
and then he
said there's forgiveness.
Yeah. I mean, and it could be argued because, like, you know, a lot of the people in the Bible had polygamous marriages that, like, adultery might even be uninformed consent, or, you know, non-consent through not being informed.
Yeah, especially in Roman times,
mm-hmm.
polyamory, even though it wasn't called that, was pretty rampant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
a lot
of people were going to orgies and having sex mm-hmm. parties, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, Rome was a pretty sexual time, and
never
did Jesus actually make any real statements about sexuality. It was more, you find anti-sex in the Gospel of Paul.
mm-hmm. Yeah, and Paul was just a repressed person.
Well, he was anti just about everything, anti-woman, anti...
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that had partied and gone mm-hmm. to orgies and participated mm-hmm. in things, and then kind of did this turnaround where everything was bad now.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a boomerang effect for Paul, I think. He went from... Mm-hmm. being totally gluttonous to totally pious.
Yeah. So how do you think, like, I have some thoughts of my own, but do you have any suggestions for our listeners on how to approach overcoming sexual inhibitions?
Yeah. When it comes to sexual inhibitions, I think And it depends what's causing it. If it was a traumatic sexual experience during childhood, and that could even include walking into a parent having sex with another person, whether it's both parents having sex together or one parent having sex with someone that's not a parent.
Yeah.
That can be very traumatic for a small child and can
Give
a certain message, especially if one of the parents is seeing someone on the side committing, quote, adultery.
I mean, also particularly if the fact that they saw it is the reason their parents broke up.
Yeah, there could be many issues going on. And I think the first step is to resolve the trauma and the issues around through counseling and or and possibly even doing some BDSM role play in conjunction with counseling.
Yeah.
Because I know that can be very healing. And I know that for me, counseling goes only so far. It's just speaking words. And BDSM brings it to life, so to speak, and really makes it impact at a deeper level, I think. But I think it takes both. And you really need to see a counselor and start with counseling. And then when you're ready, move into BDSM role play to kind of resolve some of the issues.
Definitely. And I think that a lot of times people's trauma normally doesn't just come from one source. There might be one thing that they can point to and say, like, oh, that was the trauma. That's the thing that caused my problems. But really, and one of the reasons you want to go see a counselor is because a counselor can like go through with you and like talk about the thing that you think it is, but also all of the things around it and some of the things that you don't realize are still affecting you. Because that was my experience.
Insidious sides of trauma is that it kind of lurks in the background, and you don't even realize how much it's affecting you in day-to-day life many years later.
Because like my experience was that when we first started training with each other, you were asking me about traumas and about things that affected me, and I opened up to you. I had been molested several times by different men, like as a teenager. But when I told you that, I really didn't think it was deeply affecting me, because at no point did it really feel painful and traumatic, like it was a shitty thing that happened. But I guess part of it was because it became so normalized to me, because I guess I was the kind of passive person that people who predate on younger children look for. And like part of it was I was convinced that like by not really overreacting when guys would fondle me, that somehow I was being open-minded. But it took me talking with you about all of those traumas to realize how much it was affecting me and realize how much it was holding me back sexually, especially when it came to my attraction to men, and particularly older men. And it was only after like talking through those things with you several times that I realized how much it was affecting me. And then in time, we were able to do BDSM roleplay that really kind of got at the meat of it. And when we did that, like it took several months from the time we started doing role play around my molestations and the later scenes where we were really actively touching on those things during our role play. And a big part of that was building up my comfort with you and my trust of you to where we could directly focus on those themes in BDSM. So I'm hoping that when people hear this, that they don't think that it means to just jump right into doing scenes around your trauma, because if you don't do it right, you can re-traumatize yourself.
Yeah.
It takes meeting a dom that you really trust and working together for a good long time before you go there and role play with a dom.
And I think there's several things going on, especially for men, because men are culturated not to be in touch with their feelings and emotions. Mm-hmm. And they're also taught to be more rational and not really in tune with what their bodies are telling them. They're supposed to be rugged and tough and be able to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, so to speak, and forge ahead. And they're culturated to not pay attention to these things, which kind of compounds it, because it just deeper submerges it down and pushes it away. Mm-hmm. When what's really required is to really face the fears and start building on trust and realizing that sex can be a very pleasurable and enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
And to overcome those fears and to really face them, because there is fear wrapped around it. I remember after I was date raped, I was quite afraid of anal sex for quite a long time afterwards.
Yeah.
And I tended to avoid it. And even though I loved it and I'd do it solo, and it really helped that I was so into it solo using dildos, because I had to retrain my body that, oh, it's not always bad. And fortunately, I had good experiences before the bad experience.
Yeah.
But if someone has a bad experience initially, it can shut things down. And then it's associated with, oh, this is something really bad. And I'm using this as one example, but if you were raped or fucked up the ass and it was traumatizing to you, I would start, and with whatever the trauma was, working with yourself after doing counseling, gentle ways of solo facing the trauma a little bit. The way I did it was utilizing play toys anally and re-experiencing the pleasures. I think another thing that can be confusing, and especially with rape for both men and women, is that at some level, rape is still going to feel good in the body because it's actual sex.
Yeah.
And there can be a lot of guilt wrapped around that because, oh, I shouldn't enjoy this. This was a bad thing that happened to me. And there's a lot of, there's this whole concept of being a rape victim. And I hate the word victim because you're not a victim. This is something that was done to you. And you're not just a survivor, you can become a thriver after trauma. And you can do things that, and if you go through the process, it takes some time to overcome some of this. But once you do, it frees you up to really thrive sexually. Thrive as a person, not just, because sometimes these traumas can come out in other areas in our life. in bad ways.
Yeah.
Any definitely. I know I just said a whole mouthful there.
Yeah. I think another thing that is going on is men are also so acculturated to think of themselves as the like pursuers of sex, and like sex is really good. So if you do find yourself with inhibitions around sex, it can also make you feel like not as much of a man.
And there's also the myth that men are like the Ever Ready Bunny. They're supposed to be able to turn on in an instant and always wanting sex. And that's just a falsehood. There's times, and I'm kind of like an Ever Ready Bunny in many ways, but there's times when I'm not in the mood for sex.
Yeah.
It happens, and it's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. There's, I think all things in life kind of come in cycles where you have a high uptime and you're going like Ever Ready Bunny Rabbit. And then you have kind of this decline, and where we're just kind of off for a while. And even our moods can kind of go up and down a little bit. It's a good thing to have kind of days where you feel high as a kite and other days where you're kind of, well, it's hard to get out of bed today.
Yeah.
It's when it becomes elongated and it's like you get into a manic phase and you start thinking, oh, I'm invulnerable to anything. I can do anything I want. Or get so down low that you feel like, oh, life isn't worth living anymore. So the normal cycle is healthy, but when you get into these high peaks and high lows, I mean, low lows, that's when it's a problem.
And I think that part of what we're talking about is like understanding yourself enough, because I know that training with you really, really helped me even out some of those really low lows and really high peaks. And part of it was getting in touch with my trauma and being truthful with myself about it and about how it affected me. And also, I think that through doing that process, I was able to really start asking myself, like, how do I feel right now? And like really being able to gauge how I was feeling on any given day. And I think that part of getting to that point was facing some of these fears and some of the things that had kept me inhibited for so long.
And I would like to inject here that while this was going on, you were simultaneously daily raising your sex energy and getting those good sexual feelings going, getting your daily dose of oxytocin and some of the other good chemicals that we release when we pleasure ourselves.
Dopamine, serotonin.
Yeah, and these are what I like to call mood levelers. They don't hit you so super high or super, and they keep you from going so super low. And it helps you feel more connected with life and with the universe and, and with other people. And so I think in conjunction with working with the trauma, it's good to have a daily practice where you're raising your sexual energy. And that doesn't mean you have to bring yourself to an orgasm every day, but to just pleasure yourself each day. And it doesn't take long. 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes is enough. Just to get that chemistry going.
Definitely.
And I think that really goes a long way during the working through trauma. It helps bring some of the pleasurable side to life, not just delving deep into the the dark side, so to speak.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so it's a balance of things.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to add to that?
Like a lot of the things that I've learned through training and through chasing the trauma and things like that, it really is all about emotional housekeeping in a way. I think that one of the things that when you're acculturated as a guy, like it goes back to what you were saying earlier, like you know you're supposed to be the rock, you're supposed to be able to just like have things, and like when they affect you, they affect you in that moment, and then you don't think of them again. And one of the things that like I learned through our training is that it actually takes a whole lot of emotional housekeeping to stay in a good state of mind. I find that it's important for me to every day, like, kind of just ask myself, how am I feeling right now? How am I feeling today? Is there a reason I might be feeling one thing or another? Like, if I notice that I feel sad or scared or anxious, asking myself, why do I feel that right now? Is there a reason? And telling myself my own story, like, you know, I'm anxious right now, and I might be anxious for these reasons, but honestly, like, there are all of these other things going on in my life that I can feel solid and stable about, making the choice to, like, have a different experience. And I think that that's one of the things that I really had to learn a whole lot, and it's one of the things that helped me overcome a lot of the things that were holding me back and my inhibitions.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say that once I overcame the kind of trauma around anal sex,
mm-hmm.
it was amazing, because after that it was like, oh, I couldn't get enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
It felt so good to mm-hmm. receive a guy or a woman with a mm-hmm. strap on and just have my brains fucked out, you know, so to speak. It was mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens the door to such amazing pleasure once we do face those traumas and overcome mm-hmm. the fears. But it is a thing of building trust, not only with a partner, but with yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes we blame ourselves for being mm-hmm. in a situation where we were taken advantage of or where we were abused.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this kind of victim mentality of, well, I must have deserved this somehow. No, mm-hmm. you didn't. This was something that happened to you out of the blue.
Yeah.
You didn't ask for it to happen. That's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And so just learning to trust yourself again, I think mm-hmm. is a big step in the process. Saying, I trust you. You're pretty good with people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also realizing that something that happened in the past isn't necessarily going to happen again. You're more empowered now, and
mm-hmm.
have faith in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are processes that do take some time to work through. It's not overnight.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it is something you can build over time. And I'd like to talk a little bit about trust. Initially, mm-hmm. trust is a decision. And you decide, okay, I'm going to trust this person just a little bit, and let's see where it goes. And mm-hmm. after you make that decision, trust becomes a process of taming each other, of taking turns, putting a little bit more out there each time, building that trust. And saying, okay, I trusted you this much last time. You came through with flying colors. I'm going to go a little mm-hmm. step further. And maybe the other person saying, well, you trusted me, I'm going to trust you with this part of myself. And it should be a two-way interaction. It should be it's going both ways, not just one way.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's a process, and it does take some time to build that up.
Yeah.
But once you do, it becomes rock solid.
Yeah.
It's kind of a paradox. If you really want to be a rock solid man, get in touch with those emotions and the vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
It's weird how it works, but if you try to shy away from the vulnerabilities, you're going to get soft in a way.
You're
going to be open to being hurt.
Yeah, definitely.
I hope I'm making sense there, because I know
you definitely are.
I know it's kind of a paradox, and it doesn't seem to click rationally. And for a lot of guys, we're kind of culturated to stay in that rational side of the brain. And we're kind of moving into the arena of intuitions. And
And I think one of the things that you're kind of touching on is, like, you know, when you have to build trust with another person, especially if, you know, part of your trauma was being hurt by other people, it can be extra hard to trust in that way again, especially if, like, with you, when I was learning to put my trust in you, because I had those old memories of being molested and being taken advantage of sexually, and, you know, learning how to trust you sexually was made harder because I had to fight my own, like, memories of bad experiences that I had to get to a place where I could trust the way that I needed to do the work that we were doing.
I think that's why it's important to kind of question, where is this coming from? Mm-hmm. Is it true? Because it may be true that one older man or a couple of older men took advantage of you, but does that mean all older men will take advantage of you? And it's realizing at a gut level or the body level that, no, most men aren't going to take advantage of you.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's not to say that some men won't have interest in you as a sexual person. They may.
But
they're going to misuse and abuse.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's part of the trust building process. It's being able to trust in yourself and in another person that, these things, that was back then and it was a different situation from today. But that's the weird thing about body memory. It doesn't remember the details of what happened in the past. It just remembers,
where you are now.
This thing happened and it seems to be happening now, even though it's maybe a little different, but it feels the same. And then all of a sudden the alarm bells go off in the body and and things start shutting down and we become sexually inhibited. It's like, all of a sudden we don't want to go. And it's not necessarily a conscious thing. It's more of a subconscious thing.
Oh, for sure.
Any other thoughts? Talked about the trauma side of sexual inhibition. And there's a whole nother side of it, too. And this can be anything from, am I good enough? Oftentimes with sexual inhibition, it can go alongside with things like body image, which we'll be working on in the next show. But if you feel like, I'm not worthy, or I'm not good enough, or my dick's too small, or are they going to laugh at me and think I'm really terrible at this? That can cause sexual inhibition.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so it can go hand in hand with something like body image issue. Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
We'll be talking more on this when we do mm-hmm. cover body image issues, but that's growing big time among men now.
Oh, I know, definitely. I think, you know, as the world matures and people grow, used to be that men like sex, women, you know, receive sex, but they're not really into it and stuff like that. And so I think with growing women's liberation, like all of a sudden, like the worries that women have always had about not being good enough, like men are starting to have those worries. And we talk a lot about how the media like gives us this false image of beauty standards and things like that. Well, it doesn't just do that for women, it does it for men too.
And boy, the time flies. We're at station break time already. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to this in a few moments. But before we do, I'd like to remind people that we do have a couple of websites to visit if you're interested. Check out ravenslayerleather.com. That's ravenslayerleather.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there I've got training videos and all kinds of information. In fact, we've even got a link to our Patreon page. If you mm-hmm. like this show and want to help support us in what we do, give mm-hmm. us a little bit. You can give as little as a dollar a month
mm-hmm.
or whatever you feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps us cover some of the expenses of doing a show like this. Mm-hmm. We don't get paid for it. Well, we get a little mm-hmm. bit of advertising money, but when you count the hours that put the show together, we're maybe making a few cents per hour doing mm-hmm.
the show. Yeah, so far.
Taping the show and then mm-hmm. editing the show, it takes a lot mm-hmm. of time, and then loading it up and putting in all the station breaks and all the stuff that has to be done to run a podcast, it's time consuming. And so we're basically donating our time for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to remind folks that it does take a lot to put on a podcast, even once every 2 weeks, which we do. Mm-hmm. Some people put it on weekly or mm-hmm. in a few cases, I've heard of daily podcasts.
Daily, yeah.
But usually they have a whole team of people mm-hmm. working on it, not just
definitely.
One person or two people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can either follow the link on Raven's Lair Leather, or you can go to patreon.com/ladyboygg and also find our Patreon that way.
Yeah. And also I have my sex coaching website, which is ggwilber.com. And if you're interested in really going a lot deeper, sex coaching takes this, what we discuss on the podcast, to a much more personal level and gets much more deeper into coaching
mm-hmm.
and really taking where you are and helping you achieve what goals you want to achieve with mm-hmm. your sex life.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to say, oh, you should be the one thing or another. Mm-hmm. If mm-hmm. you're sexual and want to live a happy asexual life, sex mm-hmm. can still help you come to terms with, because in our society, even asexuals are pressured. Oh, what's wrong with you? You should be wanting to have sex.
Yeah.
There must be something wrong. No, there's nothing wrong with you.
Just like all sexual identity is like, it's not as cut and dried as people think. Some asexuals are sex repulsed. Some are not sex repulsed. Some asexuals have sex to like bond with their partners and things like that. But it's not because they want sex. It's because they want that bonding moment. So like, just like with every sexual identity, it can be a very complex thing.
Mm-hmm. That's what part of what sex coaching is all about, is to help smooth out and set up the boundaries and the road markers and kind of figure out, okay, where do I fit in all of this? And
yeah,
and what is it that I want to achieve, and where do I want to go with my life? And that's what sex coaching is about, is taking you where you are to where you want to be. So anything else before we move on?
I think I'm good.
Back to our show. We're talking about sexual inhibitions in men. And we've touched so far on the main one. Well, there's three different causes for it. And we talked a lot about sexual trauma. There's also sex negative social conditioning, which we've touched on a little bit with the religious conditioning, but there's also just in general a lot of sex negative conditioning.
Yeah.
And that can also cause sexual inhibition.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of myths out there about sexuality and what men are supposed to be, which are utterly false. We touched on that a little bit, but I'd like to go a little deeper.
Yeah.
Because it has such an impact, and we're not even aware it's having an impact oftentimes. We're taught that, oh, we're not supposed to do X, Y, and Z. We're not supposed to meet a person and have sex with them, except under certain prescribed social sanctions.
Yeah.
And if we and subconsciously, if we don't follow those socially subscribed sanctions, somehow we feel like, oh, we're not supposed to be doing this, and that can be very inhibiting sexually.
Yeah. I also think that another place we get a lot of sex negative conditioning is, I think that there's a lot of people who have misconceptions about how easy it is to have safe sex, and how, like, I think that a lot of sex negative conditioning comes from this idea that it's dirty, and that if you are promiscuous, you're going to get a whole bunch of STIs, which is also not true.
Well, and also, just, we live in a culture where public nudity isn't even allowed. And have to be covered, or have parts of our body constantly covered while out in public, kind of gives a message that somehow this has to be protected, and it's somehow off limits.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, in Greek and Roman times, public was a daily occurrence. I mean, it was warm climate in that area, and the heat. I've even heard in Europe a while back when they had a heat wave where people were running around naked because it was just too hot to wear clothes.
Yeah.
But here in the U.S., it's a whole different story. And there's many countries where public nudity is just taboo, and it's in a way overly criticized. It's like, I remember during some sporting event where a woman's boob popped out, and it was such an outcry about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was during this.
It was just a breast.
Yeah, I know.
And so we get those kind of messages that can be very inhibiting. Oh, I'm not supposed to be naked in front of another person. And it can seep in. It's part of that is really getting more in tune with our bodies and getting in touch with, okay, I was born naked. I didn't come with clothing. Mm-hmm. That's a societal demand that I work.
Yeah.
And fortunately, there are places if you want to really free and liberate yourself, try a nudist camp retreat for a weekend and discover that just because you're naked doesn't mean you're going to go around fucking everything that moves.
And it's okay if you are at that kind of camp out.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, there are pagan gatherings, and especially around Beltane, it's like, ooh, fertility time. It's time to get sexual. But I think what I'm saying is to become comfortable with your own body without
that,
because clothing can be a definite shield, but maybe it's shielding more than what you want.
Yeah.
Maybe it's inhibiting you sexually because all of a sudden the hot nut date happens and all of a sudden you get out of clothes and it's like, maybe it's not a conscious thing, but somewhere deep inside there's this kind of, oh, I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
And so that can be, it's putting the brakes on sexuality to some degree or another. I'm using this as just but one example of social conditioning.
Yeah, yeah.
It's never discussed much.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even talk about it.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
to recognize, acknowledge, name it is an act of empowerment. Even if you never go to a nudist colony, just knowing that, okay, nudity is okay.
Yeah. And like one of the things that I've seen, like in some of the clothing optional places we go to, is sometimes people don't have the desire to be nude, but they will wear something revealing like lingerie or something like that, that they normally wouldn't wear in front of people. But, you know, they're with a group of people that they feel safe around. And sometimes doing things like that can kind of be like putting your toes in the water.
Yeah.
And you might find that you get a whole lot out of being provocative without being nude.
And I do have to tell a story here. We did a clothing optional event and I had a shower system that was out in the open. We didn't really have a good way to enclose it because it was near the campfire. And I used the campfire to heat the water that went to the shower system. And so we all went one night, we were decided to go. It was supposed to be a good night for meteor showers. So a bunch of us walked out to the field that's nearby and we were in the woods and watched the meteor shower for about an hour or two. We got back to camp around 3 o'clock and there's this one guy taking a shower and he had never gone naked in front of anybody. And for us to just show up as a group and with him in the shower, at first he was all embarrassed and trying to cover himself. And then all of a sudden he said, oh, screw it. It's already been seen.
Yeah, yeah.
The next day he came to me and he said, that was so liberating. I know it happened by accident, but all of a sudden, I feel more comfortable being naked in front of others. It was what I needed to kind of get me out of my out of my comfort zone and really kind of overcome this fear of being seen naked.
Yeah.
And that was very life transformational for him.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, he started coming to the events, and he mm-hmm. was usually the first one out of his clothes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So there can be this moment of liberation, that moment of transformation that can occur mm-hmm. when we least expect it.
Yeah.
It'd be very empowering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so I know that we're kind of spoiled because we go to so many different kinds of alternative community gatherings. We go to several festivals a year, and then their house parties beyond that, where people are free to express themselves how they want to.
Tuesday, once in a blue moon, yeah. When there's a fifth Tuesday of the month.
Yeah, yeah.
The party is clothing optional.
Mm-hmm. I honestly think that it's been very healing for me to be able to spend a lot of time around people who are not so inhibited by sexuality. And like, everyone comes where they are. Sometimes when people first are part of the scene, they might even be a little shocked by the nudity and the open sexuality. But I think that I've seen a lot of people like overcome that and become comfortable in time and like really mm-hmm. grow a lot.
Yeah.
And I
kind of bring this up about the nudity because it is so insidious,
mm-hmm.
so pervasive, and we're so bombarded with images of Hollywood and mass media that has this retouched mm-hmm. and beauty experts out the gazoo
mm-hmm.
using this perfect body that we can never measure up to. And that's one mm-hmm. of the complaints I hear a lot of times is, oh, I'm just not pretty enough. I'm not mm-hmm. beautiful enough to go around naked.
Yeah.
And no, when you have real mm-hmm. human beings going around naked, it's not mm-hmm. like the Hollywood version.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden you come to a greater acceptance of not just our own body, but other people's bodies as they are, mm-hmm. not all airbrushed yeah. and mm-hmm. having hair designers and
mm-hmm.
set designers and lighting designers and everything creating this perfect picture of body mm-hmm. beautiful. And so all of a sudden you readjust your sense of what is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a broader definition. And all of a sudden, oh, yes, I am beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I fit this yeah. criteria. I'll never fit the Hollywood criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And I yeah. think that's a kind of one, another one of those little subconscious things that occurs during these clothing optional events is that there is this greater acceptance of our own body as it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a healthy thing.
Yeah, I think it's a very healthy thing.
But anyway, any other thoughts on sexual inhibitions?
I think that if the listeners don't take away anything else, I think that it's very common for people to have sexual inhibitions. I think that it's something that happens to almost everyone and that we all have work that we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the best way to work on our sexual inhibitions is yesterday. The next best day to work on their sexual inhibitions is today. It's never too late to work on those things. And mm-hmm. I think that, like, if you can find yourself an alternative community to be a part of, it's a great first step because you'll meet a lot of people who they might have their own inhibition that they're dealing with, or maybe it's something they were able to work through, and like you can help get advice on how to navigate dealing with your sexual inhibitions?
Well, we've touched on two of the three causes of sexual inhibition. There is, and I wouldn't necessarily call this a cause. It's hard to tell if it's the cause or the effect, but the third cause that Dr. Patty Britton lists in her book is still being a virgin to long term. And by that, she means, you know, into your later 20s, early 30s, still a virgin.
Or later.
Or later. And that can be a very compounding issue around sexual inhibition, because the longer you go without having your first sexual act with another person, it becomes even bigger and scarier over time.
And it can be isolating.
Yeah, it can be very isolating and in a way kind of humiliating. Oh, you're 36 and you're still a virgin? I mean, that's the brunt of many jokes out there. That there's something really majorly wrong with you if you haven't gotten any by now.
Yeah.
I'd just like to kind of state that that's okay. Give you permission to, if that's what you want to do is be a virgin, that's okay. I mean, virgin, especially for, well, I'm talking about males at this point. There are a lot of males that are virgins and they're in their late 20s and above.
Yeah.
That have been, and some even into their late adulthood. And that's perfectly okay if you're good with it. But if it's out of fear and out of sexual inhibition and out of not being too afraid to have sexual experience with another,
yeah,
maybe time to start looking at what are the steps to get out there.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
and it's not necessarily to go out and get laid, so to speak, but to have a healthy sexual relationship with another person.
Yeah. And I think one thing, like people who find themselves later in life and have a hard time, you know, a lot of times, like people who are neurodiverse have trouble connecting in the ways that lead to sex. There might be trauma that they're overcoming. It might be a lot of different things, but
and even
I know in
the so-called nerds and people that are real into the brainy side of things, grade A students, sometimes they don't connect well on a personal level. They're more connected academically. So there can be many reasons why that kind of go into preventing a person from having a healthy sexual relationship.
And I mean, so I would say that that's a good candidate for someone who might look into getting a sex coach.
And it really can help to have someone guide you if you are inexperienced. Navigate and give yourself permission to have a healthy sexual relationship.
I know that in some states they even have sexual surrogates.
Yeah. And even in Texas, there's a few. Believe it or not. It's kind of in the gray area of the law in Texas. There's no laws against it, but there's
Yeah, it brushes up against other laws.
Yeah, and so it's at this point, it's still legal to be a sex surrogate. But it's controversial, so to speak.
Yeah.
just so that people, listeners, know, a sexual surrogate or surrogate lover is a hands-on sex worker who will, through touch and through body work, help you get over any body issues you have and become be able to receive sexual touch again and to give sexual touch. And it's a very controlled environment where there are very strong boundaries on what can happen and what can't happen.
Yeah.
And it's very healing when done correctly.
Yeah, definitely.
Really good sex. And there, in fact, there's a whole certification process for sex surrogates. And I would highly recommend, if you go to a sex surrogate, to find one that is accredited and that had the training in being a sex surrogate, because it's not something you can just, you know, think, oh, one day, oh, that's just touching people and having erotic times with people. I can do that. No, it's much more involved than that.
Yeah.
And so sex surrogacy is a very profound and deeply skillful field. It's not something just anybody can do, although it looks that way at the surface.
Yeah. It would be interesting if we could find a sexual surrogate to interview. If there's any listeners listening to our show who do
actually work, I could probably contact one of the certification bodies that and find someone that would be willing to do a show and talk about sexual surrogacy.
Yeah, I think that's
a very interesting topic.
Yeah, I think that's
a topic that's very, there's a lot of myths about it and a lot of misinformation out there about sexual surrogacy.
Yeah.
And so I'll look into doing that at some point.
Okay.
But anyway, any last comments for tonight's show?
I think the hour's
flown by.
I think we've covered pretty much everything I wanted to cover.
I think for me, my biggest takeaway for tonight is, if you have sexual issues, a lot of people wait and wait and wait and think, oh, it's no big deal. I can get around this. I've survived this long. It's okay. And until it builds up to a point where they're desperate for help. And you can reach out for help long before it gets to that level of desperation.
Yeah.
If you want to. And that's where a sex coach can come in handy, can help guide you and give you some of the, not just the assignments and exercises to overcome certain sexual issues, but also to help you stay on the program, be your kind of monitor. Okay, let's stay on track here. Your check-in buddy, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it's really getting to the issues and start living a more sexually balanced and healthy life. Because one of the things we often don't think about when we talk about human health issues is that sexuality is a part of good health. People that have a good balanced sex life tend to live longer and live healthier than people that are inhibited or have sexual issues or have unhealthy sexual relationships. And so it really helped to have some, and we're never taught how to have a good, healthy sexual relationship. It's not taught in school. We're not taught how to set boundaries well. We're not taught how dating skills, all of that. And so how do you, and flirting, how do you flirt? Mm-hmm. So having a sex coach or having someone to teach you these things, even mm-hmm. this show, we do a lot of shows on how mm-hmm. you can overcome some of these things on your own if mm-hmm. you want to.
Yeah.
So,
and I think a lot of it comes down to, as most things in life, comes down to communication. I remember one of the big steps for me was I used to think that I had to get really good at flirting to have a very active sex life and things like that. And I realized that if I make my desires known to people in my life and I'm respectful to people and just like, hey, I think that you're attractive and I would like to have sex with you. Like, have you ever thought about having sex with me? And if they say yes, then awesome. And if they say no, like, you just still, you continue to treat that person well, like a human being. And sometimes taking a no gracefully can open up you having that experience later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just learning that it was completely okay to just ask for what I want mm-hmm. Was a very important lesson for me.
Yeah. And so I think for a lot of the shows around sexual issues, but especially for sexual inhibitions, if this is an issue you're dealing with, get some help. Work mm-hmm. around it. Life's too short. Don't miss out.
Yeah.
Because you're worthy for having a good, healthy sexual relationship, and you're mm-hmm. worthy of sexual pleasures.
Mm-hmm. And it's something we went over in the first show in this series, but I think it's worth repeating that anytime you're having sexual issues of any kind, it is best to see a doctor and like talk to a doctor to rule out a physical limitation that might be holding you back.
Or a physical condition that could be, in some cases, mm-hmm. there's life-threatening
mm-hmm.
physical conditions that can cause certain types of sexual mm-hmm. issues, especially erectile issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. getting that checked out by mm-hmm. a doctor first is really important.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I think we're at the top of the hour. Have a good night. Enjoy those nocturnal emissions. Enjoy your bodies and explore. Discover the pleasures hidden within this flesh we live in. Mm-hmm. Have a good night.
Good night.
I find it interesting that adults in our culture are not provided with informative sexual education. Even married couples don't have access to an adequate sexual education in how to pleasure each other. It's assumed that somehow we will instinctively know all that we need to know about sex. I don't know how you feel about this, but I think there's a better method. I would like to invite you to join me in developing a sex-positive lifestyle with freedom of sexual expression between consenting adults. Join us each week to learn everything sexual. Add your comments about the show and any suggestions you have for future show topics. We would love to hear from you. Be sure to subscribe to the show so you won't miss any episodes. This concludes this edition of Adult Bedtime Stories. Are you ready to experience nocturnal emissions? Sex is the final frontier. So explore everything sexual.